the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network presents Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis. Each week, Joan brings you news from inside the Vatican and the Church around the world, as well as interviews and answers to your questions. Now, here's the host of Vatican Insider, Joan Lewis.
Welcome to Vatican Insider at this midpoint in November, a time of year that is always very busy as we prepare for Thanksgiving and days after that, the start of Advent. Now, before I turn to the news, I want to remind you that this weekend in the interview segment, in part two of our conversation, my special guests are Marlene Watkins, founder of Our Lady of Lourdes Hospitality, and Bishop Douglas Lucia of Syracuse, New York. Now, he's the chaplain for the group. Both had come to Rome after spending some time with volunteers in Lourdes. Marlene explains the mission and work of Lourdes volunteers, and Bishop Lucia explains his role when on a pilgrimage. In fact, he tells one of the most riveting stories imaginable about an encounter he had with one of the pilgrims in their group. Maybe a Lourdes miracle? The new segment will take us through Thursday this week, as Friday I left for Monopello, Italy, for the funeral on Saturday of a good friend, Paul Badi. Many of you will have known Paul through my stories, as well as his many appearances on EWTN television and radio. Father John Paul, our chaplain, in a beautiful letter to EWTN employees, wrote of Paul, "He had a great passion for three faces, the Holy Face in Monopello, Our Lady the Advocata in Rome, and the face of his wife, Ellen. The Holy Face of Monopello was said to be the veil that covered Christ's face at the resurrection, about which Paul wrote and lectured extensively. Our Lady the Advocata is the original icon of Mary painted by St. Luke and kept in Rome that Paul found on Monte Mario in the Dominican Convent of the Rosary. Its fascinating story became the subject of his last major work, the Luke Icon, Rome's Hidden World Wonder." Now, a review of the week's top stories. Sunday, November 9th. Pope Leo, Bishop of Rome, had a very important appointment at his cathedral church, St. John Lateran, where he celebrated Mass to honor the traditional November 9th anniversary of the Basilica's dedication on that day in the year 324 by Pope St. Sylvester I. Years earlier, in 313, Emperor Constantine, in the Edict of Milan, had granted religious freedom to Christians and personally donated the Lateran Palace, part of his wife's dowry, to the church as its first basilica. Until the 15th century, the Lateran Palace was the residence of popes. Pilgrims who today enter the front door of the basilica are greeted by these words: "The Most Holy Church of the Lateran, the mother and head of all the churches of the city and the world." Pope Leo Sunday told the 2,700 faithful present that the mother of all churches is much more than a monument or an historical memorial, but instead a sign of the living church, built with chosen and precious stones in Jesus Christ, the cornerstone. St. John Lateran, the Pope's cathedral, is where his cathedra, the chair symbolic of his teaching authority, rests. Monday, November 10th. To mark the six-month anniversary of Pope Leo's election, the Vatican documentary Leo from Chicago premiered at 6 p.m. Rome time in English, Spanish, and Italian on the Vatican News YouTube channels. It retraces the story, family roots, studies, and Augustinian vocation of Robert Francis Prevost in his native United States, via the memories of his brothers Louis and John, along with the voices of Augustinian confreres, teachers, classmates, and longtime friends. You will really enjoy some of the things you learn about Father Bob, a.k.a. Leo XIV. The Pontifical Academy for Life organized an international congress on November 10th and 12th dedicated to AI and medicine, the challenge of human dignity. At the start of the meeting on Monday, Pope Leo sent a message to participants offering his prayerful good wishes for their deliberations about the use of artificial intelligence in healthcare. He noted the pervasive influence on humanity of AI and other technological advances, which he said heavily influence the way we think and often alters how we perceive ourselves and others. We currently interact with machines as if they were interlocutors, and thus become almost an extension of them. In this sense, we not only run the risk of losing sight of the faces of the people around us, but forgetting how to recognize and cherish all that is truly human. Tuesday afternoon, November 11th, Pope Leo XIV invited the Benedictines to respond to the challenges of our times by placing Christ at the center of their lives. And this was during a Mass to commemorate the 125th anniversary of the dedication of the Church of Sant'Anselmo on the Aventine Hill in Rome. He said, "The sudden changes we are witnessing provoke and question us, raising issues that have never been seen before." This celebration reminds us that, like the Apostle Peter, and together with him, Benedict, and many others, we too can respond to the demands of our vocation only by placing Christ at the center of our existence and our mission, starting from that act of faith that makes us recognize him as the Savior, and translating it into prayer, study, and commitment to a holy life. Wednesday, November 12th. In his weekly general audience, Pope Leo continued to reflect on the death and resurrection of Christ, and how living this Paschal spirituality in our daily life imbues life with hope and encourages us to invest in goodness. Moreover, he highlighted how this helps us nurture fraternity, which is, quote, without a doubt one of the great challenges for contemporary humanity, as Pope Francis saw clearly. Pope Leo stressed that fraternity comes from something deeply human. As human beings, we have the ability to form relationships and bonds with others. Without these, he stated, we would not be able to survive, grow, or learn. When we coexist and live together, then our humanity is best fulfilled. On the other hand, Leo explained, if we retreat into ourselves, we risk becoming lonely and, potentially, narcissistic, as we are concerned only with ourselves. The other is then reduced to someone from whom we can take without ever being truly willing to give, to offer ourselves. Fraternity, said Leo, cannot and must not be taken for granted, even though today's conflicts, wars, social tensions, and feelings of hatred appear to contradict this. Fraternity is not a beautiful but impossible dream. It is not the desire of a deluded few. Therefore, there's a greater need today to ponder the greeting that St. Francis of Assisi would use to address everyone, no matter who they were, omnes fratres. This means all brothers, and to put everyone on the same level, recognizing their common dignity. Thursday, November 13th. In addressing participants in the Conference on the Dignity of Children and Adolescents in the Age of Artificial Intelligence, Pope Leo XIV warned that young people and children could easily be manipulated by artificial intelligence, and he insisted that safeguarding the dignity of minors cannot be reduced to policies but requires digital education. Parents and educators and governments must be aware of these dynamics, and the tools must be developed to monitor and guide young people's interactions with technology. Also Thursday, the Holy Father met with cloistered Augustinian religious, and he encouraged them to live in joy and communion with Christ while embracing humble charity toward one another. The Augustinian Pope praised the witness of communion offered by the various monastic realities that make up the Federation and are united by their vows to live according to the rule of St. Augustine. By living the Augustinian ideal, he said, they spread the good aroma of God in the world and strive to love every man and woman hidden in the silence of prayer. Again, Thursday, November 13th. Pope Leo welcomed participants in the conference Mysticism, Mystical Phenomena, and Holiness, organized by the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints. He emphasized the importance of carefully evaluating candidates for sainthood, what matters most and what must be especially emphasized in examining candidates is their complete and constant conformity to the will of God. In particular, Leo called for prudence and balanced evaluation when analyzing the lives of possible saints, especially those who have experienced mystical phenomena. Again Thursday, In a message to the 31st Industrial Conference of Argentina in Buenos Aires, Pope Leo called on business and industry leaders to ensure that economic activity serves as a tool for justice, inclusion, and human dignity, saying when the economy and enterprise are oriented toward the common good, they can and must be engines of the future, of inclusion, and of justice. He also recalled the enduring relevance of the Church's social doctrine, based on Pope Leo XIII's 1891 encyclical Rerum Novarum. Now, this denounced the unjust conditions of many workers and affirmed that neither justice nor humanity tolerates an excessive workload that dulls the spirit and exhausts the body. Reiterating the Church's vision that, quote, the economy is not an end in itself, Leo XIV said it is rather an essential but partial aspect of the social fabric within which God's plan of love for each human being unfolds. Well, those are the Vatican News highlights through Thursday, November 13th. But now, stay tuned for the interview segment with Marlene Watkins and Bishop Douglas Lucia, who speak to us about Lourdes Volunteers. Welcome to the Q&A, which today is about the Feast of Christ the King. I've been asked by many, how long has this been in the Church? Well, now I'll tell you. The solemnity of our Lord Jesus Christ, King of the Universe, commonly referred to as the Feast of Christ the King, is a relatively recent addition to the Western liturgical calendar, having been instituted in 1925 by Pope Pius XI for the Roman Rite of the Catholic Church. Pius did so as an antidote to secularism, a way of life that leaves God out of man's thinking and living and organizes his life as if God did not exist. The feast is intended to proclaim in a striking and effective manner Christ's royalty over individuals, families, society, governments, and nations. Pius XI's encyclical, Quas Primus, was promulgated December 11, 1925. In his 1969 Motu Proprio Mysteri Paschalis, Pope Paul VI moved the feast to the final Sunday of the liturgical year, before the commencement of a new liturgical year on the first Sunday of Advent. He assigned it to the highest rank of solemnity, thus liturgical vestments for the day are either white or gold, in keeping with other joyous feasts honoring Christ. The earliest date on which it can occur is November 20th, and the latest is November 26th.
Hi, this is Mike Aquilina with a few words about St. Martin of Tours. He was a soldier when approached by a beggar. Having no money, he gave the beggar half his cloak. That night, in a dream, the beggar revealed himself as Jesus. The next day, Martin left the military. He became first a monk and then a bishop.
There are some saints and martyrs who were beheaded with a greater peace than I have when someone cuts me off on the freeway or my teenager's running late for school. If I find someone's driving me crazy, the problem isn't that person, it's me. Whenever someone disturbs your inner peace, your inner life is too disturbable. Jesus showed us in the way to Calvary that no one can take your hope, your joy, your peace, or even your love for them. No one can make you act or feel anything. When Jesus reigns in our hearts and minds, we don't hand over that kind of power to any human being. So if you're letting someone drive you crazy today, maybe God's telling you to build up the interior castle of your heart so that nothing disturbs you. But that comes from prayer. As St. Paul wrote from prison, do not be anxious about anything, but in prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. Then the peace that surpasses understanding will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. This is Chris Stefanik from RealLifeCatholic.com on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider. Here's Joan Lewis.
Welcome back to part two of my conversation with Marlene Watkins, foundress of Our Lady of Lourdes Hospitality, North American Volunteers, and Bishop Douglas Lucia of Syracuse, New York. He's the chaplain for the group. Both had come to Rome after spending some time with the volunteers in Lourdes and Bishop Lucia told one of the most riveting stories about an encounter he had with one of the pilgrims in their group. And I start part two with that unbelievable story. If Marlene adds a new chapter to her book, Everyday Miracles of Lourdes, this story would probably start the chapter. I know you will be drawn by the amazing work of the Lourdes volunteers. Now, you said a few minutes ago that for you it was an altering experience. Anybody who's been to Lourdes might understand, but tell us your...
Two things I found happened while I was there. One was actually the sacraments of initiation for a gentleman who came on the pilgrimage with us. And it's a long story one way, but in a nutshell, I had met him at the beginning of the trip, and he just seemed to, I mean, you as reading people, as I have to do sometimes, it was like he just seemed a bit angry, not just angry at the world and everything. And as the week went on, he was able to go to the baths. And he happened to be an amputee, so he was dealing with a lot of issues with that, including the reasons behind it, which was a medical mishap more than anything, an infection that wasn't caught in time. And yet he goes to the baths, and I can say this much, that it happened to be two doctors working in the baths that day. And so he is literally brought into the baths, and then as he comes out of the water, and he considered himself an agnostic, he comes out of the water, and his desire is to be baptized.
Wow!
But it gets better in this sense, because as the parish priest and Lourdes would say, well, the only way he could possibly be baptized is if his parish priest was here, because he said this really has to be the parish priest who's willing to take responsibility. Well, it just happened that his parish priest was on the pilgrimage.
No
way. And they never met.
And they had never met. But being a canon lawyer, I can say it was his canonical parish. This guy was the, as we say when you're a pastor, you're the pastor of all the folks in a territory. He was the pastor. And so arrangements were made, and the proper permissions were granted, and he was able to be not only baptized, but receive First Communion and be confirmed. But what was really significant, and this is the part that really moved me, was I got to be present at the baptism. And as I'm, and it's one of the few times, you know, it's not often when I don't have to preside at some liturgical ceremony. So, but I was in attendance, and I got to stand sort of in the back watching this all unfold. But when I happened to be at the fount when he was baptized, and I will say as a priest, it was probably the most moving moment, because I actually saw a person's face from what I would call hardened before turn literally into a face of light, and he looked like a little child. And he was baptized in the same fount that St. Bernadette was baptized in.
Wow.
And he was a bodybuilder, so he just, it was amazing to see him lift himself up to the fount, even though he did not have a leg. But I still can't get over the experience of looking at his face and how it radiated. But more than that, he looked like a little child. And as some others like to tell, and I don't, I'm, the story of Lourdes is becoming more of a story I'm used to, but I guess they say when Bernadette was baptized, she cried a lot. Well, it was funny, just as he was being baptized, a child came into the church, and the child cried out. And so it was sort of like, also,
oh,
as somebody
gosh.
Said, it was like Bernadette had come at that moment.
Well, I won't ever forget that story, and I am sure you will not, forget that. And you must have 1,000 moments like that with the volunteers. I mean, their life has to be changed by just one visit to Lourdes.
I think, as Bishop says, it's transformative. And it's transformative also for the two doctors that were working in the Piscines as volunteers, serving there. There are doctors. And they were saying how profound it was for them.
Wow.
And what a wonderful experience it was, as not just medical professionals, but as in service in their faith, and to have someone come into the church.
Sure.
And we... we just see they say Lourdes. It's the things that happen in Lourdes. It's just, it may happen in other places in the world, but I don't know where. I just know these kinds of extraordinary things happen through Lourdes. And, you know, we think about the message of Lourdes. It's penance, penance, penance. Pray for sinners.
Sure.
So conversions are there, but also, of course, the physical miracles. And that's why this person really was probably drawn to go, because there are healings there. So it was interesting because he wasn't Catholic. He wasn't really Christian, but he was drawn to an opportunity of some kind of respite and healing. A dear friend for 14 years in the gym with him had
But think of the people whose lives he's going to change.
Yes.
The people that from that moment on, relatives, people in his community, his store, whatever, they're going to see a change, man. They're going to see something that you saw, Bishop Lucius. So, you know, I want to move. I know you all have other appointments, so I want to touch on two other aspects of, obviously, your, call it a ministry for sure. The wonderful book about the miracles, sitting right there on my desk, Everyday Miracles of Lourdes. You've had phenomenal success with that.
Well, yes. So they told us at EWTN Publishing and Sophia Institute Press that an unknown author writing a book the first time, only 1 out of 1,000 manuscripts ever make it to print with a publisher. And then if the book were to sell 1,000 copies, they'd be pleased. 2,000, they'd be thrilled. If it's a known author, 5,000 copies is great. So when we hit 20,000, it was really pretty amazing.
Oh, my gosh.
And now, of course, it's in French, and now it's translated into Spanish and Italian.
Oh, I met the translators
the other night
at La Vittoria.
Yes, and, you know, it's interesting. We were at the Apostolica Penitenziaria, and they asked us, when do we get the book in Italian? They're waiting. They have it in English, but they're waiting to have it. And it will also be in Mandarin, so it'll be in the simplified version and also the traditional version of Chinese. We're looking at Vietnamese and Hungarian, and we've been asked for different languages because it's universal for people to read these extraordinary stories that happen to ordinary people just like each of us, and their pictures are in there. These are real people.
Yes.
And it's happening now.
Yes.
It's not like the Gospels happened 2,000 years ago when Jesus closed up and, you know, went to eternity and here we are. The grace continues, the grace flows.
Yeah.
And so these are
Well, keep me posted when each new edition comes out, and I certainly will mention that and everything else, you know. And now I want to know about Guadalupe House.
Oh, so Bishop got to see Guadalupe House when he was just there. Because you can see pictures, but seeing the actual house. So it'll be an American presence in Lourdes. So it's an historic house because our back door overlooks the door to the presbytery, which would be where the priests lived at the time of Bernadette.
Right.
And it's where Bernadette comes running and tells the priest, because he wants to know, who is this lady in the grotto that only Bernadette can see? Who's asking for a chapel to be built? Who is this woman? And who is this girl? And Bernadette runs and says, I am the Immaculate Conception, and he's stunned. Because he knows Bernadette can't read and write. She's not studied for her first Holy Communion. This dogma is only 4 years old, and it's at this place that the Church and the world, not just in 1858, but forever knows that the Immaculate Conception, of course, is Our Lady appearing in the grotto.
Right.
And so our house overlooks that door, and it'll be the home for our volunteers. And one of our chaplains said that even Superman has a phone booth, so we finally will get a phone
booth.
We'll get a phone, and we'll get a printer and all the good things that we need. And it'll be a place that also, for example, we already had a bishop ask if he and some of his priests can come and make retreat in a quiet place.
Yes.
Sisters,
when you're not there, sure.
Families. You know, we have families that have some children with needs that are autistic, for example. The hospital beds, they're not so comfortable for them. They're sometimes agitated by the sensibility of a hospital facility.
Yeah.
So they'll be able to stay there. We know there'll be other needs for this house that we will discover that Our Lady has in store. But we're really excited about it. So we're renovating. They asked us in France, what's the difference between renovating an historic home in France, because it's over 200 years old, and renovating one in America? I said, well, we'd be finished right now. So it just takes a really long time.
Exactly. And I will put up, obviously, you know, the link to your blog, because there's some great pictures, and you go into the the need for the money, what it's going out for, and it probably might be finished by now in America, but I think it would cost a lot more too. So there's kind of a trade-off on that. But in just the closing minutes that we have here, tell us just your impression, even seeing Guadalupe House and knowing what it's for. And
well, for me, Joan, I fell in love with Lourdes when I was there. I grew up on the...
Oh, excuse me. Was this your first trip?
This is my first trip.
Oh!
But I grew up on the Canadian border near literally about 5 minutes from Quebec. So I was very much home with all the French. But what I really was impressed with Guadalupe House is a word that Marlene already has said. It's the presence. That it's going to be the presence of where... that whole sense of what Pope Francis so often talked about, accompaniment, that people can come to the Lord, to the Lord's, and they will be accompanied. Not that they haven't been doing that already, but one thing, and even I had a meeting with the Bishop of Lourdes while I was there, and they were talking about the need for the American presence, especially for English speaking. There's a lot of other languages, but they really do appreciate the help of the English speakers, especially Lourdes volunteers.
Yeah. Well, we've run out of time. I have lots of time, but our dear friends here today have some very special appointments, as if you haven't had them from morning till night during your time in Rome. But so I just want to thank Marlene Watkins, foundress, of course, of Lourdes Volunteers, and I'll be getting that website up. And then Bishop Douglas Lucia, mm-hmm. I got it right that time. Yeah. Of Syracuse, New York. So thank you for your time today, but well beyond that, thank you for what you do for those who are ill in any way or another, by bringing them closer to the Lord, by giving them comfort, by your word, Bishop, accompanying, or the word of both of you. So Marlene, thank you.
Thank you very much, Joan, as always.
See you again in Lourdes.
Yes, you will.
And Bishop Lucia, thank you so much.
Thank you, Joan. It's good to be with you.
For more information on these stories, or to check out Joan's blog and to ask her a question, go to EWTN.com. That's EWTN.com. Thanks for listening to Vatican Insider on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.